Thank you, Mariah, and thanks to everybody for accommodating my particular situation. I'll jump ahead of the slides and let you know I do not have a conflict of interest, nor do any of the authors, but I do have a conflict of time, and I simultaneously have a poster presentation going on. I'm filling in for John Green at the last minute because he just wasn't able to attend. So I'm going to run through the presentation, excuse myself, and then come back for the Q&A. However, we have to take a moment of time to look at this really fine picture. I don't know if it's looking as good on the screen, but this is the work that we're talking about took place in the area around Clarksdale, Mississippi, and Mississippi Delta. And for those of you that are blues fans, that's one of the birthplaces of the blues. And this is the famous Crossroads. If you're familiar with Crossroads, I was thinking actually before, I think Cream actually covered that tune, but it goes back to like Robert Johnson, things like that, but it's a very familiar theme in blues. These are the highways that comprise the Crossroads, and that's a picture of it. No disclosures. What we're going to talk about in this presentation is essentially using spatial analysis, geospatial analysis, as a public health tool to identify problems in access, to identify health disparities, health inequities. And broadly speaking, we're going to see how this is actually an alternative to the more sophisticated technologies and methodologies that are available in terms of statistical modeling. Simultaneously, we have these geospatial technologies like GIS, so many of you will be relieved that we're not going to talk about multi-level statistical modeling. One of the problems, and these are very text-dense slides, so you can read them, and I'm not going to read them to you. One of the problems we have with geospatial analysis is what is the geographic boundary of the area that we're looking at? And that sounds like it shouldn't be a problem, because if you say, well, I'm looking at this community, you should be able to look at this community. If you're looking at this county, you should be able to look at this county. But publicly available data, I think most of us have had the experience, if you go to three different sources, you're going to get three different answers to the same question very, very frequently. And I am a hardcore enough New Yorker to make a New York reference even in a Mississippi presentation. I recently had the experience of looking for data about health access in Harlem. It sounds like we should know where Harlem is and what Harlem is. There's a definition of Harlem, the boundaries of the community, that the New York City Planning Department has. There's one that the New York City Health Department has. There's one that the New York City Education Department has. There, you can do it by zip code, which is a much smaller area than the actual community district. So when you say Harlem, it doesn't mean the same thing. And that becomes very, very relevant because when you look at healthcare access, you're really trying to bring together two different things. You're bringing in the demographics of a community and health indicators within that community. And it's hard enough to agree on the parameters of the demographics. In other words, if you want to know the racial ethnic composition of Harlem, you have to agree on what its boundaries are. And if you go to a source that sees it as a broader swath of territory, you're going to get a different answer than one that has a narrower one. But however you look at the demographics, the units of analysis, geographic, geospatial analysis, that are used demographically, and most of that comes from the Census Bureau, do not conform to the same units of geographic analysis that comes out in public health data. And it gets very, very challenging to put these kinds of things together. Having spoken about New York, let's go back to Mississippi. These are the areas that we're focusing on. And Mississippi is an interesting state to work with because it probably has the most carefully documented access problems. I think that the more has been published about health professional shortages in the state of Mississippi than in other states with comparable shortages, for whatever reason. and also protracted health professional shortages and so forth. And these two areas of Mississippi, we have the Gulf Coast area, which in addition to protracted health professional shortages is still not fully recovered in some respects from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita 5 years ago. And the Delta is particularly, has its own particular kinds of health issues that relate to some of the agricultural pesticides and things of that nature, as well as, again, protracted shortages. This is some of the ways that you can conceptualize an area. And actually, John started this in a more local level, because before you get to town, you get to county. And counties are can be extremely, extremely misleading units of analysis in rural communities, because rural counties can be very, very, very large. So they can be far more rural or even frontier on one side of the county, and they can be an urban center elsewhere in the county. You can have a community health center that's somewhere in the county, and that sounds good, except that there are people who live 30 miles, 50 miles from that community health center, and it's still within the county. So you want to get to town, you want to get to census tract. What got me started on this Harlem thing was I was looking at the health professional shortage designation for Harlem, and HRSA very helpfully lists it by census tract. So there are 45 census tracts within Harlem that are health professional shortage areas. That's kind of meaningless if you don't know how many census tracts there are in Harlem. And it's very hard, and they're all four-digit numbers followed by two decimal points. So it's not helpful in locating a place. And then to make it even crazier, some of the census tracts that were listed as health professional shortage areas in Harlem turned up in Washington Heights on a different page in the same website. So it's very, very difficult using the publicly available data to get a good handle on precisely what's going on in your geographic unit of analysis. So what we're suggesting here, and this is, I think, at least for me, this is an important point to consider, is that qualitative research, talking to people, listening to people, doing so in a very, very systematic way, is an important augmentative strategy to the kind of quantitative research that tends to really dominate in public health. And part of the reason is that when you use these large data sets, you have certain types of inaccuracies that are kind of built into them very, very often. And even if you don't, even if you can find a good harmonious set of data, you still are dealing with aggregate data, and you can lose some of the geographic specificity. For example, pockets of poverty within a relatively affluent city came up in an earlier presentation this morning about Austin, Texas. Relatively affluent, median income is within $500 of the national median, but that doesn't mean that all is well everywhere in Austin. And if you look at Austin, if you look at Travis County, things look different than if you really get on the ground and talk to people. So what we're suggesting here is research that's done to explore things at the community level, and with the understanding that the community is comprised of individuals, so that we're looking at a mixed method kind of approach that uses the data that are available and struggling to make everything line up as it should, but that gets to these kinds of different features of health access that are very, very difficult to get to in a quantitative kind of way. Cost and affordability, we tend to focus on insurance status, and a lot of health access studies really are about what's the percentage uninsured. And especially with, I mean, probably not a good idea to talk too much about the health reform debates that we just got through and probably going to heat up again very, very soon. But at their best, the focus was on insurance access. And some people have even been using the phrase insurance reform instead of health reform for the legislation which actually is called the patient affordability. So it gets back to the economic end of it, but that's not all there is to access. And these are the kinds of things that we need to be able to look at, where people live relative to their source of care, how they get from one place to another, in other words, transportation. And these are the kinds of data that are going to be very, very difficult to get to in a quantified kind of way. So these are some of the attributes of the communities in which a series of studies were done. But I think in the time that I have left, I'd like to go through some of those studies. This is a Hope Community Quality of Life Survey. This was done by a not-for-profit in Mississippi that combined GIS and work with direct with work with people in focus groups to get to flesh out information about things like distance from where people live to usual source of care, adequacy of transportation, car ownership, things of that nature that really go beyond anything that would be captured in insurance or affordability per se. Project Redirect looked at these same kinds of issues, but in a very specific focus on inappropriate, or I should probably better to say non-urgent use of hospital emergency departments. People either using a hospital ED as a source of care because they couldn't get to a usual source of care, or ambulatory sensitive conditions that should have been managed in primary care resulting in an ED visit. And this allowed getting the kind of what's going on, what brought you to the emergency department, allowed for some fine-tuning of the way that the primary care sites function. For example, people used emergency departments in the early evening, 7 o'clock or so. Turns out that in many cases there was only one car in a household. He works, he drives to work. She's home with the child. She has no way to get to the doctor. He comes home from work. Now there's a car that can get to the doctor, but there's no doctor's office that's open. The only thing that's open is the hospital emergency department. So through this kind of first focusing on the health data part of it, the higher rate of ambulatory condition emergency department use, but then getting to the local level, looking at what are the reasons behind that, that's a qualitative data piece. And as you can see, this has been done in a number of different locations, all have in common that they're high poverty, high minority communities, and they all led to very, very specific interventions that could be done at the primary care level to enhance access. And the final one, which is a very, very ambitious one, has to do with repeat pregnancies among teenagers who have had a first baby and then have a second one while still in their teen years. And there seem to be spatial patterns within that. Does everybody know about Healthy Start? That's a nurse-driven home visiting program, and that's what this comes out of. So this is a way to better target some of these kinds of resources that are designed to provide multi-level support to pregnant and parenting teens by looking at hotbeds of repeat pregnancy, so that rather than work only at the county level or the town level or whatever the larger geographic unit is, to really be able to home in on where the need is greatest. So, where are we going forward? We need to recognize the strengths and weaknesses of any model that we use. Sometimes it seems if we quantify things, that's very, very strong. Sometimes we need to look more closely at the data that we're using. On the qualitative side, we need to adhere to formal methodologies of qualitative research, and we need to use appropriate analytical methods there, but we also need to engage, but we have the strength of being able to engage community in the research. The term there is community-based participatory research, and with that, we can flesh out what's not available in the kind of quantified data that that we have. This is, I have no idea if that's at all, so it's, whether it looks like an eye chart, and you all need to go to the optometrist or if you can actually read that. But that's some of the publications that have come out of these various studies that I've just spoken about. Okay, we're back to the screen.